This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From booth number six, in the crap part of Landover, Maryland, at FedEx Field, Rog, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
International Champions Cup North America, presented by Guinness. Special!
Special, 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 special. It's podcast number one of our 2015-2016 season.
Season
Rog.
Six. God, it's going to be the worst season yet, I promise you.
Yeah.
But we are potting today, having undertaken a journey.
Yeah.
We've driven from New York City.
Well, we time travelled, technically.
We thought we were going to drive to Landover, Maryland.
Yeah.
Instead, as Chelsea and Barcelona play on the field before us, we've arrived in the future.
In the future. Soccer is... There are people, they're standing up, they're singing songs.
Oh! This is the America.
Yeah, this is...
I want to have happened for reals, David. I feel like we've travelled into the future. Like, 2016, this could be the whole of America.
I don't know. Now I'm watching it, I think we affected the space-time continuum, Rog, and I think we made a terrible mistake, and I think we've got to go back in our DeLorean, or Mini, and we've got to change
the picture.
It all.
It's absolutely packed. Half the stadium looks fully behind the Yokohama tyre industry.
Yeah.
Chelsea fans, half of them...
Although wearing their Samsung shirts to support the Yokohama tyre industry.
Half of them are diehard Barcelona-born and bred. The atmosphere is rather fantastic, Davo.
Yeah.
To be candid... We're at the International Champions Cup North America, presented by Guinness.
Yeah.
I just read the Guinness bit on the email invitation and came like a lemming. I didn't actually know football was about to be played.
We thought we were just coming to drink beer, which we are doing. But we thought that was everything about it.
We just did the coin toss.
We did do the coin toss.
I can't even say it properly. Three times out of five, it comes out of coin toss.
Well, you and Regis Philbin. That was Regis Philbin quite legendarily on the set of Password. They spent 3 days in an audio replacement session because he said toinkos every single time he did it. So you and Regis with the toinkos.
We did the toinkos with Ivanovic.
Yeah.
And we did the toinkos with
Busquets.
It was all I could do not to whiff my hand within 2 feet of Sergio Busquets' face.
That was a problem, though.
So I could see if he grips his forehead and falls over in agony when I do it. He does when it's on television.
There was an early problem, though, when we walked out to the centre of the field and the ref immediately told us that he loves the Men in Blazers show. We knew that this game was going to be a disaster.
Badly officialed.
Yeah.
But what a tournament, Dave.
Yeah.
Watching this is less a football match. It feels more like a cultural happening. I mean, this is the third year that the ICC's taken place, putting down roots, expanding into other continents. This huge number of teams. You look at it, Club America, Chelsea, Benfica, PSG, Barca, and LA Galaxy.
Yeah.
Six league champions. There's a Champions League winners, Barcelona, playing in front of us. And probably just as importantly, only one defending ICC Cup winner.
Yeah.
Manchester United.
Yeah.
Rose Bowl, FC Barcelona versus LA Galaxy. 93,000 people came. Highest recorded match ever, I think, watching an MLS team. And the thing about this whole cultural experience, it does feel a bit like a Grateful Dead concert. We've met people who are travelling with Barcelona in every city they are playing in, supping.
It's like fish.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's football and fish.
Yeah, slightly better looking crowd here tonight than
the average
fish
concert.
Well,
it is the greatest trophy in sports, Rog. The Charlie Stilettano Cup, the life-size gold-painted figure of Charlie Stilettano. Naked, I believe, only from the waist up. That was a change they made after year two.
Yeah, well, they took away the nakedness when they realised only 60% of footballers wanted to compete for that trophy. And the other 40% just were repulsed and vaguely
sickened. It is the greatest trophy in sports, the Charlie Stilettano Cup.
But I have to say, the razzmatazz around the experience has impressed even Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
Who floated the notion yesterday of playing real English Premier League games in the United States.
Oh.
He said, maybe when we don't have Stamford Bridge for a couple of years, we can come here and play a couple of matches in the Premier League in the United States because the support is fantastic. He says it's not normal for a country to bring 60,000 fans to a friendly match, David.
Well, you're right. And with Sepp Blatter officially...
moving to the radio.
No, officially moving on in, I think that's September 2034 when he's handling the transition, Rog. Anything is possible in world football.
For me, the highlight of the whole ICC
has
been seeing Wayne Rooney's new hat.
Yeah.
5 years ago, He was like the before on the hair club commercial.
Yeah.
Now, watching him run around our fields in America.
He's like the before.
He looks so verdant. It's a kind of miracle I've only ever seen before on Paul Simon's album covers in the 1980s.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he's having problems right now in sectors that I didn't know previously existed. I don't even have numbers. There might be alien numbers that can describe 3-point gawp frumding zap.
It's just jealousy
that would
speaking.
Describe what it is. But I'm not sure that I understand exactly what's going on the back of
I've got to say, so for the fans, these games are magical. For the teams, to be candid, I think they are mixed blessings, David. I mean,
yeah.
You spend time around these teams and you see the commercial wings of the team salivating, exposing their brands to key markets, the marketing departments going to full bore. I was at Chelsea's camp last week to spend the day with Jose Mourinho. Me and Jose, David.
Tight.
Do you think two men have ever had such differing levels of confidence in one room before?
No, probably not.
Chelsea were based in Montreal.
Yeah.
And he chose the site purposefully to be out of the media spotlight.
Yeah.
So he can do what he needs to do, which is to prepare a team to defend the title.
He chose the site of the interview.
He chose the site of the training camp.
Yeah, okay, got it.
He said he wanted it
It wasn't all for his interview with Rog.
He wanted it off the media's kind of glare, out of the spotlight. He said his team's not doing Jimmy Fallon. They're not doing the Today Show. They're playing the games. They're three games and getting out. And I think his feelings are a reflection of the fact that these massive jaunts, some teams are here in America. A lot of teams are here in America. There's a lot of teams in Asia. There's a lot of teams in all points. But these jaunts really aren't the finest way for a team to prepare for the task ahead always. Excursions to the US and Asia have become the norm. But you look at City in their pre-season, Davo. They've played in Toronto, Houston, Melbourne. They've gone 39,223 miles. Spurs playing in the MLS.
Yeah, they did a post-season and a pre-season.
Spurs, all-star game. They're playing in Selangor, place I don't even know where it is. Sydney. Yeah. Denver and Munich, 28,977 miles. Chelsea, Bangkok, Sydney, Charlotte, D.C.
Yeah.
I mean, last season, Van Gaal blamed his tough start on the team's tour of the U.S. He turned not good for preparation.
Yeah.
And then you look at teams like Leicester, who are playing Lincoln, Mansfield, Burton and Birmingham, 434 miles total by bus.
Yeah.
West Ham are playing Colchester, Charlton and Norwich, 284 miles.
They've been distracted by the Europa League.
If they get off to a flying start, Dave, we'll see if there's any truth in Van Gaal's comments.
Well, we should say the atmosphere here is phenomenal. Lots of fans. Nice to meet some GFOPs before the game. Drive down, Rog. We came via Philadelphia. We tried to solve. We asked the question, and perhaps we asked the wrong question, Rog. Hashtag Pats. Or Geno's.
We wanted a cheesesteak. I am, by the way, currently podcasting in a state where 83% of my body is currently cheesesteak.
I have gained 7.5 pounds solely in cheesesteak on the way down. We got into this, Rog. It was like science. We wanted to figure out. We ate cheesesteaks at Geno's, first of all, at Pat's. And then we went to Jim's. There was an outcry.
We hashtagged Geno's or Pat's.
Yeah.
Rarely have we been so insulted. I mean, we have been putting terrible television.
Yeah.
Broadcasted now for a year.
We have never upset more people.
We've been podcasting for 6 years.
Yep.
We have never had more abuse than when we asked the simple question, hashtag.
Because
Gino
we were asking the wrong questions, Rog. We were asking the wrong questions. The question should have been, where should we go and eat cheesesteak? GFOPs of Philadelphia. And they would have said, well, Jim's is good. And we went to Jim's and Jim's was
magnificent.
Hashtag Jim's.
So the question, Gino's or Patch, hashtag, the answer is
Jim's. Hashtag. So... we've never podcasted in front of more people, Rog, who have absolutely no interest in anything we're saying. We should say in the adjacent booth to us, there are a group of people doing the television, I believe, for Mexico, who seem very, very opposed to everything that Men in Blazers stand for right now. They might just be upset because Miguel Herrera has lost his job, which
David,
we're heartbroken about today.
Can we just pour out a Guinness for Miguel Herrera? Oh,
yes, we should do.
I mean, we'll chat about the Gold Cup in the second part of the show, but what a wonderful man, a man who represented both the managerial acumen, well, really of a fan on the sideline. He gave us so many wonderful moments during the World Cup. Things are very complicated, I understand, from a Mexican football fan perspective.
Yeah,
they have a very different take on exactly how the team have performed and the discipline and organisation that have tailed off under Miguel Herrera. But I mourn many, many happy memories that can never be taken away from us from Miguel Herrera, and we have launched hashtag Miguel Herrera for
on
England.
The bright side, exactly. I was positive coming with the bright side. Herrera available for England again, yep. Rog.
And we also launched hashtag Bob Bradley for Mexico.
Maybe Everton. That would be very, very funny. Okay, we got a packed show. We're going to relive a summer that's been the best of times, World Cup glory, Rog, and the worst of times, Gold Cup agony for US soccer. We're going to delve into a busy transfer window. We're going to celebrate the arrival of Stevie G, Didier Drogba, and Andrea Pirlo to American
Stevie
shores.
Stevie G,
it's raining men, as the weather girls would say, Rog. And we're joined by captain of the defending Premier League champions, one of the most talented, successful, and yes, polarising men in English football, Chelsea captain John Terry. Sits down with Rog. You won't want to miss that. Okay, to the football, Rog.
Pouring this out for Miguel Herrera.
Oh, Miguel. Wet Herrera. You've got to pour out a Guinness to a wet Herrera. It's not quite the same. Although,
a dry Herrera.
It could wet a dry Herrera.
A bar fight Herrera. Nice, these are memories, Dave, that we will never shed.
There's no way we can construe that it was a bar fight and somehow get him reinstated, Rog. No. That was a no. I have not seen the video, Rog. You have. Okay, to the football, Rog. We're going to start with the Women's World Cup, or as we like to call it, the World Cup. It has been almost a month since Carly Lloyd and American States United marched on Vancouver and defeated Japan 5-2 in the World Cup final, capping off a tournament that saw the US build on every performance and save their best for last.
They saved civilization.
They did save civilization.
It was an emotional, nation-girding victory. How that team toyed with our emotions in the group stages.
Yeah.
Only to lift us to a thrilling collective ecstasy, a national soccergasm.
Soccer.
Oh, stylistically, I have to say, Davo, it was less an American victory.
Yeah.
To use Alexi Lalas's parlance.
Yeah.
It was more Italian.
Yeah.
Just like the Azzurri's World Cup victories in 1982 and 2006 when they were a bit flat in the group stage.
Yeah.
Only to find their rhythm deep into the elimination round until they could not be beaten.
Yeah.
5-2.
Five goal explosion, Rog.
5-2.
Yeah.
But still, Davo, to me, the biggest wow wasn't the final scoreline. It was the Nielsen estimates.
Yeah.
I mean, the full USA-Japan match averaged 25.4 million viewers on Fox. Yeah. Most watched game ever in the US. Outperformed the NBA finals. At one point drew nearly 31 million viewers. It crushed the USA-Portugal game from the World Cup, which had previously held the record. New York Magazine talked about how it outdelivered the primetime average of every TV show last season, including Sunday Night Football, the 2015 NCAA Men's Basketball Championship game, the NHL Finals, the final game of the 2014 World Series.
Well, the only things that beat the Winter Olympics, year.
Even The Bachelor, Davey.
The
even
Super Bowl.
The most emotional rose ceremony yet in The Bachelor.
The Super Bowl and the Academy Awards were the only thing that beat it. And even more impressive than its People 2 Plus numbers, its demos, Rog, were just out of control. And to all those people who said, oh, only women are going to watch women's soccer, men aren't going to watch women's soccer, almost total co-viewing of men and women.
God, I'm pro co-viewing, Dave.
Yeah, I would love co-viewing.
I mean, this was the Women's World Cup, Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, this was in the 1990s. This tournament was an obscure backwater. I mean, I think the games weren't even on TV in 1991.
Yeah.
It became a big sports occasion, like must-see television.
Yeah.
In 2011. But I believe 2015, it became an elite sporting spectacle. And for that, we really have to thank Carly Lloyd.
No, it was amazing. And what the US women, you know, we talked about this before the World Cup and who I wanted to win. And I said that, you know, for me, it was about the US because the US have given so much to the women's game. The US have deserved this. They've deserved to win their first World Cup since the 99ers, Rog. But this was a World Cup not just made by the US. It was a World Cup that was just thoroughly entertaining from the opening, not the opening game, but the second game, Rog, on. And so many teams, so many clubs bought so much to this World Cup. And it was fantastic, highly, highly watchable and enjoyable competitive football for the entire tournament.
It was. I mean, when I think about Carly Lloyd, David,
yeah,
which I do a lot now, I think about a huge amount. I think she's an amazing American. I mean, Michael Bradley once talked to me about his dream of being what he described as a big player on a big team, making big plays in big moments, in big games. And that pretty well describes Carly Lloyd's performances in the elimination rounds of the tournament. That 60-minute hat-trick, David, that thrilled the nation. That third goal, a half-field thunderstrike, which, but for the record, just as I prophesied, for Kyle Beckerman.
Yeah.
But a year late in a slightly different game of someone else's foot, but I'll say hashtag it is no one.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled for it. I mean, Matt Futterman.
Are you suggesting for a second that it was actually Carl Beckerman who scored this goal within, transported within the body of Carly Lloyd?
I don't know how the red gods work, David.
Good, I
just report what they tell me. It's all intel. But Matt Futterman for the Wall Street Journal, he wrote a piece before the World Cup about what Lloyd did to prepare for her career and how to reinforce her career once it had started. She talked about the years she'd obsessively spent training, running drills with an Australian coach in New Jersey on top of all the professional training and college training she did. I mean, he wrote, she wanted to develop all the skills and creativity that come naturally to players who grow up playing pickup games all afternoon in Europe and Latin America. Yeah. That's what it takes. I'm just thrilled that someone who had that dedication, that passion, that commitment to go through hour after hour after hour of humdrum drill in a New Jersey gym received a dividend.
The definition of a big game player, the definition of taking a moment, the definition of cat amongst the pigeons, Rog.
It is a cat amongst the pigeons. And what I'm fascinated by now, Dave, I mentioned in your tape, which members of this team will turn their success, which is now in the rearview mirror, into endorsement dollars. I mean, there was an article, United Entertainment Group CEO Jared Moses.
Yeah.
He talked about...
I know Jared.
Know him well. Wonderful guy. He said, Carly Lloyd could score endorsement deals totaling, quote, between $15 to $18 million over the next 2 years. And then he tagged on, if she wants. I mean, it's fascinating, if she wants. Because to me, Carly Lloyd has a very, I'm happier playing football kind of persona. She's very much a... kind of a jocker, someone who just wants to play, to compete, to thrill. She signed with Visa in tournament. ESPN have talked about how Carly Lloyd's agency is now in negotiations with an automaker, a watch company. But who else, Davo, from that team? And when we're talking about endorsements, I'm trying to talk about which players will become lasting kind of stars in the American sporting firmament from that team.
Well, I think it's interesting. Obviously, the performances up until that final game were really about the defence, Roger. I mean, Julie Johnson had and Becky Sabrin had had amazing tournaments. But defenders rarely get on the Wheaties box. It rarely happens, Roger, defensive specialist. I think Alex Morgan did not, we're not the only people to say, did not have the greatest World Cup.
She was the face of the team going into the tournament. Clearly not match fit. She struggled often. She's still massively marketable. I mean, as was proven by her, I mean, they chose her to be on the EA Sports FIFA cover.
Good
for FIFA 16, which to me, by the way, is 2015's version of the Brandi Chastain sports bra reveal. Yeah. A woman on the front of FIFA will be a seismic step for women's football. Abby Wambach, Davo, fascinating. Another face of this team going into it. But how she suffered in tournament.
Yeah.
She pulled out of the Women's League going into the World Cup so she could focus on single-mindedly on the tournament. I mean, with her starting, the US seemed slow and cumbersome. It wasn't until she was benched that they actually thrived. And I wonder how that felt. I mean, yes, she's a legend. Yes, she scored more international goals than any other player of any gender in soccer history for the United States. She's competed at 4 World Cups. But there's a competitor to her court. Her moment at the tournament was commanding her team to score in the China game while she watched from the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, that kiss with her partner post-final victory was epic. But the win must have felt a bit like receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Oscars for
I'm not sure. Remember Heather O'Reilly came into the panic room before the World Cup, Rog, and she said that she knew that whatever happened to this team... how they did at the World Cup was going to affect all of them. It wasn't about individuals. It was what was going to affect all of them. And I said to her, a rising tide carries all boats. And she said, yes, a rising tide carries all boats. And I think you look at Abby Wambach's speech that she made in the victory, the amazing parade in New York City that I'm so sad we missed, Rog. And I think that they were all so genuinely, genuinely moved and excited. And I think there was this collective thing. Obviously, Rapinoe came out with an amazing amount of credit as well. We should mention her. Hope Solo made phenomenal saves in that Australia game. Didn't have a lot more to do
She's got the self-inflicted scarlet letter.
Yeah.
I mean, she will be forever mum. Yeah. Sydney Leroux, primed to capitalise, failed to capitalise in-game, as did Kristin Press.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones coming out of it, Becky Sauerbrunn.
Yeah.
She's got that kind of nerd cool.
Yeah.
Julie Johnston, who is going to be, I believe, the face of the team come the Olympics, along with Morgan Bryan.
Yeah.
Fascinating series of performances, a genuine charisma. Megan Klingenberg,
yeah,
possibly my favourite, and especially all-time, a great GFOP. We adore, admire, Rivera, Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah.
Alongside Carly Lloyd. We will see. At Soccer Is The This tweeted us, Carly Lloyd is to Abby Wambach as Sarah Koenig is to Ira Glass. Hashtag this American women's national team.
And Jill Ellis also, Rog, much criticised, including by myself, I must admit. I thought she reminded me of Roy Hodgson earlier in the tournament. She is vindicated by the end of this tournament. Not totally in terms of the style of football played by the Americans. I still think there are some underlying issues for the US. Not issues, challenges moving forward. The rest of the world is catching up, as we saw with certainly France. Certainly, you know, even, I can't believe we're saying this, but a resurgent England. Another topic worth talking about at some point. But Jill Ellis, I think, is certainly vindicated and comes out with a lot of credit.
Hashtag Jill Ellis for Mexico.
Yeah.
I'll say it's going to be interesting to see how long the embers of US glory burn strong. Jeff Kasouf wrote a piece on NBC where he wrote, women's pro salaries in the NWSL range from a low $6,842 to a high of $37,800 for a 6-month season. I mean, that is a hard, brutal dose of reality. So I just say to all of our listeners, channel the excitement that you felt watching the World Cup final by buying a ticket for a game. I know I'm going to be going and support the growth of the game at the grassroots level across the US.
Yeah.
I mean, I am interested to see the impact that this victory, this cultural moment, has on girls across the nation about how they see themselves, how they think about themselves, how they think about their own athletic prowess. So many dads obsess about their sons' athletic abilities. And so many parents allow their daughters to opt out easily and then declare awkwardly that their daughters are, quote, not athletic, even though they spend zero time catching, throwing, kicking with their daughters. And I think to some degree this win, I hope this win will change that as more girls play seriously, particularly more African-American and Latino girls, Davo. American women's soccer culture can only benefit.
And I think, look, when women's rights around the world are such a huge issue on a global basis, Rog, I think actually the impact on the global women's game and on global women's issues might be even greater and more important, dare I say, than what's going to happen in the US. And quite apart from what's happening in the countries around Europe, where women's football has been laughed at, it's been ridiculed, and it's been just frankly more than not supported, it's been positively discouraged at every single level. Then we look at Asia and Africa. It's pretty amazing what can happen.
Well, a beautiful segue, Davo, for us to pause for a second and reflect upon brave, brave, sad, sad England. I mean, possibly the only time I'll ever use those adjectives before England, brave, and not be sarcastic. I mean, our ladies lost in the cruelest, self-sabotaging fashion.
Yeah.
That semi-final, an own goal in the 92nd minute, which led to them going down 2-1 to Japan in a game they were dominating.
Yeah.
Probably the only semi-final England will ever be in a World Cup in my lifetime.
Well, other than 1990.
Well, I didn't see 1990.
Oh, okay.
I was on camp. I was the creepy English counsellor on camp in Maine for a summer.
Okay.
I got a day off to go and watch that game, England against Germany, 1990 World Cup. And nobody in the bars of Portland would allow me to turn the television off the Portland Sea Dogs game to put it on the World Cup semi-final. So I
thought you were
going
to reveal to me that you're only 24 years old, Rog. And I was both going to be impressed and also feel terribly sad for you for your premature male pattern baldness.
You're mixing me up with Roger Miller. I say poor Laura Bassett. You think of Doug Flutie's Hail Mary pass in the last second.
Yeah.
Laura Bassett experienced the exact opposite. It was the coolest part was that they dominated the Japanese. They tasted the final they'd never really dreamed about before.
Yeah.
This was like England's version of League of Our Own playing out before our eyes, only to be cruelly dashed. And we thought before that penalties were the harshest way to get out of a World Cup. But no, being English, new levels of misery can always be found.
Yeah, but the newest level of misery would have been then to lose the third place match. Only two teams end the tournament on a win, Rod. Actually, maybe somebody in the group stays
in the third place match.
I think it was a great thing for that women's team. I think it was a great that moment. Honestly, I get get emotional about all sorts of things, but
I must say, Houston.
That moment when they I did cry heavily during Exotic Marigold Hotel 2 on the way over to Spain. Even more exotic. I'll tell you, that is a weep. I defy any man to make it through that movie on a plane without crying. But I felt it was an incredibly emotional thing when they won their third place game, and that was a huge overachievement for that England women's side, and well done to them.
I'd say the whole of England felt like a Morrissey song, because just when there's a momentum behind the women's game and England woke up to the women's game, the Olympics is on the horizon next year for the American team.
Yeah.
But Britain won't be sending a team. Scotland, no. Wales and England cannot politically mesh because they're worried FIFA will use it as a precedent and get rid of the individual teams
Scotland
and meld them all
Wales,
together.
The Scottish and Welsh FAs, maybe.
So these great women will not be able to play at the Olympics, stymieing the possibility for the game to continue to develop. So it's short-sightedness, regional politics, preventing them from playing in Brazil at the Olympics. That's the true tragedy. They'll have to wait till 2019 to be on the nation's radar again. So when we joke, it could be worse, you could be English, America, we really mean it. Let's feel better by walling in our own detritus, Dave. Let's talk about the Gold Cup.
Detritus. I'm not sure, though. I just want to say on that England thing, I'm not sure that England's third place finish at the World Cup can be seen as a bad thing for those English ladies and English football for women. I think it's been a great thing for English women's football, and I think that will be a positive force. If the women are taken seriously within the English game, it will be a positive force for women in the global game in general. Okay, the Gold Cup, Rog. While the US
AKA
women...
Sharknado 4.
Sharknado. While the US women revel in World Cup glory, it's been a far different summer for the men's side. Jurgen Klinsmann's team crashed out of the Gold Cup, Rog, in the semi-finals, falling to the Reggae Boys of Jamaica 2-1. The Von Trapps then lost on penalties to Panama in the third place game. It's the team's worst Gold Cup in 15 years.
Oh, Dave, they'd reached the last five CONCACAF Gold Cup finals. First time they've been eliminated by any CONCACAF team apart from Mexico. First loss to a Caribbean team in the Gold Cup. First loss to a Caribbean team on US soil since they lost to Haiti in 1968.
I remember it.
The US were outshot 25-5 by Panama in the third place game, which I did not care about, which said they lost 3-2 on penalty kicks following a 1-1 tie. Enough people say they know they can't believe. Jamaica, we have a bobsled team. That's all I'll say, Dave. America, this is the price you pay for Loretta Lynch cleaning up CONCACAF.
Yeah.
And always comes
back to
bite you.
It's not fixed anymore.
Dave, how much do we care about the Gold Cup? Because we'll say the US looked uncalibrated. They could barely register a shot up front the whole tournament. Please, Tim Howard, when you come back, can you come back as a striker? Good news was the defence was even worse. Timmy Chandler looks more American by the game. John Brooks and Ventura Alvarado were given plenty, probably too much rope, to hang their team. And in the finale against Jamaica, the sight of the passionate yet crude Alan Gordon coming on to play battering ram in the second half, rendering Klinsmann's visions of revolutionising American soccer into a total football 10 outfield players attacking as one, defending as one, a bit of a dud. This was US soccer as long ball united. There's been a huge outcry of angst amongst the American hardcore about Jurgen, how he must be fired now. Bob Bradley was fired. He lost in the final against Mexico. But it was only 48 days before the semi-final that Jurgen's team beat Holland. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and 40, Germany.
43 days before that he beat Germany. How do we feel, David?
I'm struggling to understand this. We spoke about this a little bit on the car down, but we were full of cheesesteak. But we did speak about it. I'm struggling to understand this wobble of confidence in the team after they've had an amazing couple of months. And I think that, you know, for me, we have a rule. We don't read too much into international friendlies. The CONCACAF Gold Cup, for me, is a... And I've been to lots of Gold Cup games over the years. I've been to World Cup games Also, there is no similarity in intensity between a Gold Cup game and a World Cup qualifier in any way.
Any competition that's named after a Spandau Ballet single, guys, we don't take
That doesn't have a Charlie Stilettano's life-size model of Charlie Stilettano as the trophy. So I think it's overreaction. But I've been trying to understand what it is. And I guess here are the few things that I can understand. The one thing that I think continues to concern US fans is particularly the problems that exist in the back four, problems that happen in defence. And you just mentioned it. And we've seen again and again, Jurgen Klinsmann has been in the job for a very long time. He's played game after game after game. We still have no sense of what is the central defensive partnership, what is the defensive mentality, what is the defensive strength of this team. I still don't think we know that.
Let's get Lallas and Balboa back.
I'm still not sure we're seeing the emergence of players to step up and take the place of the greats, Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, Tim Howard.
And Josie Altidore.
Michael Bradley.
Good
and
Josie!
Josie Altidore, you raise the other elephant in the room. Who is going to score the goals for the US? Josie sent back, it seems, reportedly, because he wasn't fit, whether that was physically or mentally, to go and play for the US team. I think Zardes has looked fantastic. I love his addition in the squad. I love his speed. I love his incision. I think he's a fantastic addition to this team. Love watching him play. But the emergence of these new stars, it just doesn't seem to be happening.
I mean, Jurgen has compiled a 41-14-18 record since he took over 4 years ago.
Amazing stuff.
56% win rate.
Yeah.
It's admirable. I've got to say, the manner in which he's won it, it's just not the radical kind of razzle-dazzle American style that he promised he'd unearth.
Yeah.
And the whole situation is beginning to remind me, I know everyone at home will be saying this before I even say those words, it reminds me of Avram Grant when he was the Israeli coach.
I know. God, that took the words right out of my mouth.
Grant was the Israeli coach.
Yeah.
Israel, the Israeli hardcore didn't really like him. They had a phrase for him. He was truly hated by many who were like devoted to the team. And when the chips were down, somehow he'd always, by luck, pull out a win when the cards were stacked against him, but it was always by like a bobbled goal in the last minute or an own goal or something bizarre. And in Israel they call that phenomenon the luck of Avram, literally Tacha Avram, which means
Tacha Avram. I'm going to use that all season.
It means Avram's ass. He pulled these wins out of his ass. He seemed to pull victories from his bum with a lucky goal or a controversial decision.
God, I wish he'd done the same at Chelsea.
That's it. There's been some Tacha Jurgen, David.
Yeah.
We've watched some Tacha Jurgen. I mean, the Ghana game, Tacha Jurgen.
I think
the Portugal game, Tacha Jurgen.
Yeah.
The most heroic battering of all time. The Belgium game, the Dutch game, the German game, Tacha Jurgen in reverse was the Jamaican game.
Yeah.
When they should have won, but Jamaica took two goals, two mistakes, two set pieces. You live by the Tacha, you die by the Tacha, David.
Yeah.
And the question is, how much do we care? Because for me, this was the Gold Cup, a tournament which I believe, thanks to the refereeing and the blatant match fixing, which is evident in the way Mexico qualified for the semi-final and the final, and the general culture around the tournament, which makes it a very important tournament, only if you're involved as a beneficiary of the graft and corruption which we've found out it surrounds it. Right now, I believe the Gold Cup is less respected than the International Champions Cup.
I'm not sure that I can accept that blatantly, that terrible refereeing is always blatant match fixing. I would have to question almost every football game I ever saw if terrible refereeing was just
the
result of blatant match
CONCACAF
fixing. Yeah, I know, but it's the new CONCACAF, Rog. It's the new cleaned up CONCACAF. I think that there are two results from this, which I think one of them, both are ultimately positive for the US, but it's going to be a little bit scary getting there, Rog.
Tell me. We have
a stronger CONCACAF. We have a stronger CONCACAF. There are more teams in CONCACAF that can compete. And now there are more teams than just Mexico. I'm not even sure Mexico believe this, but there are teams in CONCACAF who believe that they can come into the US and that they can hold and potentially beat the US on US soil. And that is as we move into the World Cup qualifying, as we move towards the hex, I do believe the US have got a very favorable draw in the first round. But as we move into the hex, might be slightly scary to some American fans. And yet, this is the best thing that can possibly happen for US soccer and for this US team, is that we have a stronger CONCACAF and the US team can get forged in the just
crucible.
Crucible.
You can't say forged without using the word
forged
crucible.
In the crucible. I was going to say goldmine, but forged
crucible.
In the crucible of the hex. And I think that's ultimately very, very good for the US. The US are going to come out stronger to go
from
and
the Crucible.
Play in the World, yeah, to go and play in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. The biggest takeaway was something we knew. CONCACAF Thunder is real. Mm-hmm. And when we saw it at the World Cup in Brazil.
By the way, I don't even think that Jamaica are the best team in the Caribbean, Rush.
Yeah, it's Antigua and Barbuda.
Yes.
It's two teams.
Yeah.
Scrunched together as one.
Yeah.
I mean, the Costa Ricas, the Panamas, the Jamaicans, the Hondurans are all catching up with Mexico
yeah.
and the US. And to be candid, the players' exposure to MLS is a key part of that. The Gold Cup is America and Mexico's birthright no longer. And I agree with you. I mean, I think that the US will be all the stronger. The true hurt to me is not losing in the semi-final. It's that the FIFA rankings are used from this to help determine what pot you're drawn into in the World Cup proper, which I've got no doubt we'll qualify for. In the preliminary round that you've just mentioned, we've been drawn against Trinidad and Tobago, the winners of St. Vincent, she's amazing, and the Grenadines, that must be a backing band, or Aruba, as well as Antigua and Barbuda versus Guatemala. That sounds to me like about 12 countries we're going to play.
Exactly.
I don't care. It's like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, they all are. We'll take them all, Davo. By the way, also Confederations Cup in 2017. To me, that's another joke of a tournament that means absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
didn't exactly help Brazil or Spain in their World Cup campaigns when they played the final in 2013. I do want to say congratulations to Jamaica, who had a game plan to beat the US, a Jose Mourinho-esque game plan to grab goals off set pieces and then hang on. They also pushed Argentina around in the Copa at points two. It augurs well. And as for Mexico, shame on CONCACAF for enabling the victory with a string of shake your head decisions. Shame on American referee Mark Geiger for his role in the Panama semi-final decision making. It was shameful stuff, but they were fantastic in the final, and obviously we've talked about Miguel Herrera, the punch, the huge gap between the punch and the firing. It's fascinating to see exactly what he'll do next. We'd love to make a show with him on a weekly basis.
Exactly. As I've said, I'm willing to stand down as a man in blazer and be replaced by Miguel Herrera. You and Miguel would make wonderful television.
How can you?
You wouldn't understand anything that each other are saying.
It's like you and me.
It's not that different. Yeah, not that different.
After the semi-final loss to Jamaica, I spent the rest of the night watching USA 5, Japan 2 on DVR. It's what I'm going to do now whenever I'm in numb pain, David.
Well, the US now faces, you mentioned this, Roger, playoff against Mexico to see who gets CONCACAF's lone 2017 Confederations Cup berth. Mexico beat Jamaica 3-1 in the final Sunday. The US qualifies for the playoff by virtue of winning the 2013 Gold Cup. The game is scheduled for the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, October the 9th. A lot will be made of that game. I agree with you. I'm not sure how important that truly is. Okay, Rog, the summer transfer window. The Premier League season is upon us. I can see your nipples tingling through your blazer, I should say.
Shameless.
We're back on NBC SN, Rog, this coming Monday night. That's the 3rd of August.
No one's more surprised than us.
I don't know why they've invited us back. With a Men in Blazers suboptimal pre-season show. I think we can announce that our first guests, Rog, the two Robbies.
Finally, a duo who actually knows something about football coming on our
This might be show. NBCSN's plan to replace us with the two Robbies. We're not sure if we're going to be fired by them during the actual broadcast.
That'd be good for football in America if that happens, David. But they're fantastic.
That. So it's been a frenetic transfer window. Raheem Sterling leaves Liverpool for City. Mourinho welcomes Radamel Falcao. And Liverpool makes it rain, Rog. Brendan firing dollar bills all over the place. Acquiring Christian Benteke, Roberto Firmino, Nathaniel Klein and Danny Ings, Rog. Also, James Milner on a free transfer. What do you make of it all? What do you make of the transfers? What should we be focusing on? What is just an illusion, Rog?
David, life is just an illusion. But getting back to the football, which is the only tiny little life raft I cling to. This is a season of war chest, David.
Yeah.
It's been an off-season in a league of food chain and apex predators.
Yeah.
Liverpool could do nothing to prevent Manchester City from clawing Raheem Sterling away from them.
Yeah.
In the same way as Aston Villa were powerless when Liverpool came with a crowbar and a U-Haul to seize Christian Benteke.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a league in which money is everything.
Yeah.
And anyone not cheering for Chelsea, United, Arsenal, City, willfully deluded about their team's chances of winning this league.
Yeah.
But God, it's a wonderful, wonderful willful delusion.
Yeah.
Manchester City, the big acquisition, Raheem Sterling, 76.4 million for a player of 18 Premier League goals. Seems a lot, but he's English, so the price is inflated. And to City, money, no real object. What a damaging war of attrition the transfer saga was, David.
Yeah, it was odd. It was unlike most transfers that we see, Rog. There was so much out in the press about it the whole time. And I think Raheem Sterling, his agent, but his agent doesn't really care. Raheem Sterling came off looking much the poorer for it.
I mean, the damage done to his own reputation, Sterling, is dreadful press savvy. It continued post-signing when he talked about the need to make headlines now for the right reasons, but then added, I'd be quite happy to lie down on the sofa for the whole day. Great press quote, Raheem. He's really learnt his lesson. Is it going to end well, Davo? Because for me, Sterling's got a great challenge and an opportunity now. He can either continue to develop to the elite level that we all hope from an England fan perspective. He can find a consistency, add a clinicality and front a goal to his game. Or else he can simply decompose and become another could-have-been prodigy souring on City's bench.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, I've been watching Man City's pre-season with interest, you know, and albeit that they've been playing against Vietnam, one of the lesser moons of Saturn, and a pub team from Tibet. But I do think Raheem Sterling has set about his play. I think he's looked fantastic within that Man City smalls running in a thousand different directions system. And I know that the narrative that seems to be expected is, oh, Sterling's going to be a huge letdown and he's not going to get a game and he's not going to make the team and he's going to be poor. I just have a feeling that he's the kind of player who might just grab this opportunity by the throat and might just end up making it count.
If I was a City fan, I'd welcome him with the delight I would anyone who provides a club with an alternative created force to David Silva, who can't do it all on his own, however magical he is. Liverpool have already spent the money. Christian Benteke, $50.7 million. They've got a gingy in Adam Bogdan. They needed a gingy. Every squad needs a gingy. Klein, Firmino. Joe Gomez, who I actually think is going to be the pick of the bunch. Danny Ings ticks their rather lumpy flavour of the month. He'll rot on the bench before he's pumped out at the end of next year. And James Milner, Davo.
I mean, well, I was just in Liverpool, Rog, and it's an amazing role reversal. That I was there in Liverpool. You were in Barcelona. Not really that's my team, but I was
the
in
Liverpool of Spain.
While you were in Barcelona. But in Liverpool, it's amazing how many Reds are very, very excited about James Milner. That's the transfer that they think is going to make the difference for them.
I told John Green that Milner and Jordan Henderson in the same midfield, it's the most upstanding, morally just midfield partnership the Premier League's ever seen.
It's the hardest working midfield partnership.
The two of them, they remind me of Ace and Gary, the ambiguously gay superhero tandem from SNL of yore. I say for the second season on the run, Liverpool have grafted on a glut of talent to a squad that was already in transition.
Yeah,
it's also Spursy. Who looks at Spurs and thinks, yes, that's a good business model? Biggest Liverpool news of the off-season. Liverpool defender Kaolo Touré has revealed, according to the English tabloids, he's terrified of animals, including his own dog, who he hasn't touched in 7 years. That headline just begets so many questions.
That's genius.
United.
Yeah.
Exit Robin van Persie with a whimper and the oddly neutered Falcao along with him. United have spent $124 million. The spree will continue. Darmian, the tasty Depay, Sergio Romero, not the Sergio most United fans were waiting for, Morgan Schneidlin, and Bastian Schweinsteiger. What an influx, Davey. What an influx.
This is an all-star team. This is the New York Cosmos at this point. It's hard to see how all these pieces fit together. You talked about Memphis Depay. I mean, he looks absolutely fantastic. I was lusting over him watching him the other day.
When you have a child and you call him Memphis Depay,
yeah,
he's not exactly going to go and become a painter or just like...
He's going to be a jazz singer or a professional footballer. He's going to be one of the two.
I believe in nominative
could do an R&B album. He might have an R&B album in him. I think he looks absolutely fantastic. Bastian Schweinsteiger does not seem to be in the shape that he was in last time I saw him.
I'm not sure if they brought Bastian Schweinsteiger or they brought Bastian Schweinsteiger's head photoshopped onto my body.
However, they've looked good in pre-season as well, Rog, and I think that they'll find a way. I think they'll be improved from last season, certainly. It's just a sense that something's not quite right behind the scenes at United yet. That is not a completely happy dressing room.
Such an influx. It's very tough for locker room chemistry. So many of the players who shone and worked so hard last season now rewarded with uncertain futures. I think there's a manager between managers trying to show that they're ruthless and replacing deteriorating stars. And managers who demoralise the locker room by creating mass uncertainty. I've got a feel LVG is slipping towards the latter when he shouts out, "We can use more creativity!" to a squad with Rooney, Mata, Depay, Young, Yanishai and Herrera already in it. Never mind Marouane Fellaini and Michael Carrick, who must be asking themselves all the time, what does this mean for me?
I mean, we're only 2 years from the retirement of Sir Alex, Rog. How different the culture of a football club is just 2 years later. The Manchester United, their youth team culture, this idea that it's fused within, they've got a sort of a Manchester home-based ethos surrounded by these other people who buy into the Manchester United system. It's just so different. I've not seen a club change that much.
Yeah, I mean, will it work? I love Schneidlin, and I think it's a massive chance for him to show he belongs at a higher level and can add some speed to the heart of United's midfield. Schweini, Bayern have let him go. They talked about how emotionally they still respect him, but he's been injured often recently. He can't be, quote, a calculable factor going forward. It's going to be fascinating watching him. Pirlo was discarded by AC Milan and became a boon for Juventus. He elevated the team. But then you look at Thierry Henry, jettisoned by Arsenal to Barcelona just when he was past his prime. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch which Schweini they have purchased. And I think there's no doubt a couple of excellent teams in this Manchester United squad. It's breeding like a virus. The question is, can LVG find it? I mean, he's got no idea who his best players are. On the training ground, apparently, he just shouts out numbers. He calls them as numbers. 7, 9, 11, which is better than when he tries to remember their names. There was a press conference when he referred to Chris Smalling as Mike. He kept calling him Mike.
By the way, we've got to call him Mike all season.
Mike Smalling.
That's so good.
I'm not a number. I'm a free man. More and more, I listen to LVG's comments to the press and think he is just a Dutch Chance the Gardener in being there. In the garden, growth has its seasons. We will see exactly how this pans out, Davo, but I think we will enjoy it either way.
It seems that sometimes, though, or just as often as the major signings having a major difference, it is also the less heralded signings. You know, I said last season, for me, the biggest key to Chelsea's season last year was not Diego Costa, it was Nemanja Matic. Matic was not the very heralded signing when they brought him back to the club a year and a half ago. And that's who's going to be the Matic of this season? Who's going to be that unheralded signing?
Well, it's not unheralded. But you look at Arsenal, Davo, as active as they have been in the Premier League transfer market, but $70 million for Peter Cech.
Yeah. Brilliant signing.
To me,
brilliant
that could
signing.
Be one of the key transfers of the summer.
Brilliant signing.
I cannot believe how quickly he has moved from the Chelsea bench to becoming Arsenal's lead spokesperson.
Well, it's because there are, he's become, I would say he's probably the eighth or ninth biggest personality in the Chelsea dressing room. He's now become the biggest personality in the Arsenal dressing room and a real leader.
I mean, we've talked so much about how when things go pear-shaped at the Emirates in seasons past, there's just a leadership vacuum. He's filling it, David. I mean, simply by adding to Arsenal's mix, I mean, they've not had in a long, long time, a seasoned repeat Premier League title winner. And when you hear him claim Arsenal are just, quote, a few little details away from catching Chelsea and jabbing at Mourinho and his squad, how would you feel?
I'm very torn on the Peter Cech to Arsenal thing. Because on the one hand, I can't believe that Chelsea sold such an important player to a rival and to a huge rival for the Premier League title. But at the same time, I feel that Cech deserved it. And he deserved a chance to have a transfer. He wanted to stay in England. He didn't want to go. He didn't want to go abroad. And I think that wanted to stay in London. His family is very settled in London. And I sort of think it actually made me sort of respect Roman Abramovich, that he has a human side, that he let him go, that he decided that Cech has done his time. He served Chelsea very, very well, and he deserved the transfer. It's funny, about a year ago, before the season, I remember Garth Crooks was on Sirius, and he was saying that he felt the most important thing for Arsenal to do was to sign a goalkeeper. And they had as a guest on the sort of head of the Arsenal Supporters Club in America, who got so upset with Garth Crooks for suggesting that that would be a key transfer for them. But he's absolutely right. This is a huge transfer. Having a goalkeeper of that calibre behind a back line that was somewhat shaky, certainly at the beginning of last season, I think it's going to make a huge difference.
I mean, by little details, I'm guessing Peter Cech is referring to a striker who consistently score season-long, something Giroud, Walcott and Welbeck have not all managed, especially in big games. The truth is, Arsenal need to manage overall consistency season-long. The past three seasons, if you look at two seasons ago, they started well and then wilted.
Yeah.
Last season, took them a while to find their form. They came on strong late on, too little, too late. And they have to find the kind of consistency season-long across the team that Chelsea summoned last season.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for the Community Shield next week. Yes, I just said that. I cannot wait for the Community Shield. Wenger and Mourinho's games, even friendlies, they're less football matches. To me, they're more ideological conflicts.
Well, Chelsea, Rog, my team, didn't do a huge amount in the transfer window. They're sort of replacing, like, so far, they're replacing like for like Falcao in for Didier Drogba. Rog, that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
A head scratcher, insipid season at United. Jose Mourinho, same agent, Jorge Mendes. He fancies himself, though, as a dog whisperer who can bring out motivation. He says Falcao is in box fresh shape.
Yeah.
But you think Fernando Torres, you think Andrei Shevchenko, this could go either way. And Azimir Begovic, Davo, filling the void for elite goalkeepers willing to rot away on the Chelsea bench. Now Cech's flown the coop.
Yeah, well, look, I think Chelsea play a lot of games. I think he's going to play, but I don't think he's going to play as much as he played at Stoke, Rog. Victor Moses back in the squad. Traore back from loan. Kennedy playing tonight in the Guinness Champions Cup for the first time against Fluminense. And rumours are, obviously, that they're going heavily and they're going to up their bid for your boy John Stones at Everton.
A lot of rumours. Lacazette, Ramon, Pedro Rodriguez. But a slightly frustrated Jose Mourinho has talked about Premier League rivals trying to buy the title. A line which kind of brushes under the carpet that Chelsea spent $184 million on Diego Costa, Cesc and Cuadrado, Felipe Luis, Luke Remy last season.
Yeah.
In slightly more interesting news, Jose Mourinho says he would never consider dyeing his grey hair.
Uh-huh.
That makes news in England, David.
That's one of our kind of men. That's one of our principles.
He says, in life, I rarely say never, but I'll never try to hide my white hairs. I'm very afraid of death. This is one of my favourite Jose Mourinho quotes of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very afraid of death. I like living a lot and enjoy being here. It's Jose. It's also Harold and Maud. It's my favourite kind of Jose Mourinho. Everton, cosy state of disarray like Pied Piper before TechCrunch Disrupt Conference. It pains me to see teams like Crystal Palace, Davo.
Yeah.
Awash with the new Premier League TV money, snapping up Johan Gabay. And Stoke, with the arrival of Ibrahim Afellay, the Barca flop. They've actually become an eastern suburb of Catalonia. Stoke manager Mark Hughes played in Barcelona in the 80s. The era of really, really unfortunately tight John Stockton shorts. And now former Barca players Bohan, Marc Muniesa, now joined by Moher El Arachi earlier this summer. It's clear all these Barca players, they just dream of playing with a Scottish Messi, Charlie Adam. You have to wonder who's going to pick up the slack and give opponents the requisite kicking they expect when they go up there. Big sad news at Leicester. Nigel Pearson has been replaced by Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah.
His chief qualification seems to be that he's not Nigel Pearson. He won't menace the press. He will not tell the press to piss off. He will not threaten to snap them like ostriches. And he will not have sons who sexually humiliate Thai prostitutes.
Yeah, we've got Bilic down at West Ham who's going to cause some damage in the press room, Rog.
We've got very, very little to work with on the managerial front. Let's talk about a better league, David.
Yeah, MLS.
The league of tomorrow.
Rog, and MLS. And MLS All-Stars, Rog, are poised to take on Tottenham and Sir Harry of Kane this Wednesday.
They should play the Mexico League All-Stars.
I know, you're
absolutely
right.
They should absolutely stop this stuff. Stop this nonsense. Play Liga MX head-to-head.
Don't play Sir Harry of Kane. They play them this Wednesday night in Denver, Rog. Heading into the All-Star break, Ben Olsen's DC United sit atop the Eastern, FC Dallas lead in the West. And the league is in the middle, Rog, of the largest European immigration to North America since the Irish potato famine of the 1840s. Ba-dum boom. Give us your tired, your poor, your Gerrards, your Drogbas, your Perlows, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free and play in America.
Stevie G.
Yeah.
It's so funny seeing him in LA Galaxy jersey.
Yeah.
It just looks freaky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even odder. I couldn't believe I'm saying this. It's even odder than seeing him in those Warrior jerseys he's pulled on shit with shame over the last few seasons at Anfield. Seeing Stevie G in an LA Galaxy jersey.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe. It's like seeing Renee Zellweger or Mickey Rourke just post up for the first time. It looks like he's had some work done.
Yeah.
But I've got to say this, and you're going to tell me it's big of me and patronise me.
Yeah.
I'm happy for him.
Yeah, that's patronising, Rod.
I've never seen him so happy. He looks like Elizabeth Gilbert at the end of Eat, Pray, Love.
Uh-huh.
It's like Stevie G's gone to Bali and fallen in love with a Brazilian businessman. Uh-huh. He's not playing football. He's searching for the physics of the quest.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what kind of a player he's really going to be. I'm more interested, Rog, as a New York City FC season ticket holder, on what the remarkable happenings in New York City and the Bronx, where they continue to play on a field that I'm convinced it's not actually a rectangle, that field. I think it may be a trapezoid, a rhombus of some kind. I don't think that the right lines are running parallel to each other.
Who
on
gives
that field.
A crap, Davo? When I look at Andrea Pirlo on the field and that sloopling, oddly
so
shaped sandbox at his Yankee Stadium.
He's good in a rhombus.
It just falls away. All I see is hair.
Yeah.
It's the most beautiful hair I've seen at Yankee Stadium.
And he's playing with Discaroo.
Since Johnny Damon. I mean, what a sight. Mick Discaroo coming on, lining up beside Andrea Pirlo.
Yeah.
Should be illegal, that much beautiful hair.
Yeah.
It's less a midfield. It's more a Pantene commercial.
Yeah.
It's possibly the most erotic midfield of all time. They're like the footballing equivalent of Hanson, a lot of them. And there's two bald men, Davo.
Yeah.
I'll look at them. This tweet came in at Swampy13. He said, I had to turn off the New York City FC game because I was looking at Andrea Pirlo and I kept getting pregnant.
That's very...
Game? 5-3 against Orlando.
It doesn't matter that they don't have a defence, Rog, when you've got that midfield and up front. And Poku, oh, he's a tasty
player. It's a new American Basketball Association, the MLS. Yeah. One of the things I love about having Andrea Pirlo is just how many texts I get from my friends sending me photos of themselves at dinner with Andrea Pirlo sat at the next table.
He loves dinner.
In all of the photos, he's just beaming.
Yeah.
There's like a halo around the man. He's like St. Andrea.
He's so
of
cool.
New York. And now Drogba to Montreal Impact.
Of course he's going to Montreal.
My favourite team that's ever been named after a font. I like Garamond 14 myself.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. 18 months, $3 million a season.
Yeah.
MLS has got Lampard, Kaká, Gerrard, Villa, Pirlo, Giovinco, Dos Santos, Drogba, and even more impressively, Sean Wright Phillips.
Yeah, exactly. MLS and BWP.
MLS is fulfilling its promise of being the best league in the world. If it was still 2004. What does all this mean, Davo, that they're all coming now? What does
That's
it
a big
mean?
Question. You've just gone deep, Rog. That's a deep, big question. I'm not good at deep, big questions. I don't know what it means.
I'll tell you what it means. First of all, MLS, I think in the bowels of MLS, they've decided the parity of the league where talent gets sent all over the country. They've ripped that up. It's New York, it's LA. They're focusing on the media capitals of America.
Yeah.
They used to be obsessed with equal bandwidth for every team.
Yeah.
No longer. The elite aging player in Europe loves American lifestyle, but they're not dreaming. I'm sorry to say this, because I love Columbus.
Yeah.
I love Schmidt's House of Sausage. But it means for most European players, New York City or LA, Beckham's Miami becomes key for MLS if it's really going to go. It gives them a third option. But it also means so many people sneer at MLS for being an elephant's graveyard, a lucrative retirement village for the elite. Yeah, in the early days of the Premier League, remember, Davo, 1990s?
Yeah.
English football was derided. Ruud Gullit, Gianluca Vialli arrived. They were both in their deep 30s. They'd won European trophies. They dazzled in the powerhouse Serie A.
Ravanelli, Juninho, all of those guys.
Ravanelli. Well, I met a guy recently, a wonderful GFOP, a Juventus fan. Sorry, I forgot his name. He told me when he was a kid and Ravanelli moved to the Premier League, he told me that he felt pity for him, that he was moving to England. He felt sad, as if the move was a personal embarrassment.
Yeah.
these players could just be the first wave, David. If more money comes into MLS, that means bin the salary cap.
Blackburn were champions, Rog. Let's not forget that Blackburn were champions.
Younger, fresher talent, more coveted talent will follow. The Patrick Vieiras, the Dennis Bergkamps, the Mark Overmars, Yap Stams, Fabian Barthez, Eric Cantonaz, who came after the first wave, transformed English football. The tectonic plates underpinning world football, David, they could be shifting. They could be shifting.
Wow. Amazing, amazing stuff, Rog. Well, I hope so. Maybe New York City could get a rectangular feel. I think that's just the one thing I'm looking for. But maybe I could learn to enjoy it. It's like that game of chess they used to play on Star Trek where they played that three-dimensional chess. It's that sort of is what they're playing at New York City at this point. It's a very, very different game. The MLS All-Star game. Sorry, Rog. And MLS. An All-Star and game is Wednesday night at 9 p.m.
Play Liga MX, Eastern for time, God's sake, Don.
On Fox Sports 1. OK, as we said, Rog, one of the joys of the International Champions Cup is the huge number of Premier League icons it brings to our shores. And, Rog, earlier you, of all people, got the chance to speak with one of them, the captain of, some would say, the greatest team in Europe. The one... Actually, I wouldn't even say they're the greatest team in Europe, Rog. The one and only... John Terry.
Our guest today is captain of the reigning Premier League champions, Chelsea Football Club. The Stamford Bridge faithful love him. Opposing fans love to hate him. But almost everyone agrees the defender's one of the greatest to take the field in the Premier League era. Since making his debut at the age of 17 in 1998, he's won 4 Premier League titles, 5 FA Cups and the Champions League. Joining the pod, a man who at 34 years of age played every single minute of Chelsea's championship campaign last season, John Terry.
Thanks very much, guys.
Oh, John, congratulations on last season. Not just the title, but you played every minute of every game, which is especially astonishing because in 2012, your career was widely perceived to be in decline. Then Chelsea manager Rafa Benitez suggested you might not be able to play 2 games in a week anymore. How have you summoned a career second wind? Is it fitness, tactics, or the benefit of no international football?
I think under Rafa at the time as well. I had a slight injury and I wasn't able to get back in the team. And obviously publicly he wrote me off as well, which has kind of come back to bite him on the backside. But, you know, for me personally, it was a great season. To play every minute of every game is kind of unheard of nowadays as well. So on a personal note, that was excellent for me. But, you know, on the side of the team, it was just so good to get my hands back on the trophy and get the Premiership back. It's been a long time since we last won it. So to do that was the most enjoyable thing for me last year.
But how do you understand your own rejuvenation? It's like you've been drinking from the fountain of youth.
Not quite. Not if you see me after a few days training. it's just down to hard work, really. And, you know, obviously during the season you have to manage and be able to stay fit and healthy, which I've done. You know, you're always one tackle away from missing a few games here and there, but I managed to kind of stay away. And I think as I've got older, I think I've changed my game and adapted a little bit as well and kind of let the younger lads get on with that side of it and kind of take a back seat slightly. But, you know, just to try and stay fit and healthy, eating the right foods away from the football club, training as hard as I always do, and also with a little bit of luck. But, you know, it's just the right time and the right place. And obviously you spoke about the manager as well, who had a personal impact on not only last season but the season before the way I played as well.
I want to talk about Mourinho in a minute, but in terms of last season, the club started in buccaneering fashion, and then you kind of spent the second half of the season smothering all comers. In big Premier League games, you routinely Chelsea would be one up, and then you bring on defensive cover. Mikel would rumble on as your closer and lock the game down. Sometimes, I feel that Jose Mourinho derives as much pleasure from his teams rendering other big teams impotent as actually scoring goals. Is that true?
Absolutely, and I think the main thing and objective is to win games. You know, even you see him on a daily basis in training, he hates conceding goals. He hates teams that lose games and give silly goals away in training with a minute or 2 minutes to go. And as you say, he brings players on to close the games out. which not only frustrates the other team, but, you know, it sets us well for the next game and in the future as well. But he's like any other manager. He's been different class, and he always finds a way to kind of to firstly break teams down, and when we do go one or two up with the likes of Diego and Eden getting the goals, you know, we're always capable of closing it out and bringing on the players the likes you've already spoken about. But, you know, that's really enjoyable, and he certainly loves that side of it as well.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received from Jose Mourinho?
You know, he's just always told me to work hard and give everything. You know, keep things simple. At the end of the day, I'm a defender. You know, there's a lot better players in the team than me, so give the ball to them. And that's the best bit of advice I think I've ever received. from him, which is true. I see so many players trying to overcomplicate it nowadays. You know, it's in my position, you have to break the play up and give it to the midfielders, who are the ones naturally with all the quality, the vision, and see the game a lot better than we do at the back.
Teams that win week in, week out, season in, season out, they often tend to tune their manager out, John. What does Jose Mourinho do to prevent you all from just becoming complacent?
I mean, on a daily basis, as I said before, you know, we could be doing a small possession game or a five-a-side game or a head tennis game in training. And if one team kind of gives up, or, you know, he's on the sidelines or he's reffing the game, he's taking control of the session, he doesn't allow that to happen. So every minute of every training session, he's kind of, you know, the detail that he puts into his sessions, we're working for 1 hour, no more, no less. But for that hour, he wants everyone fully concentrated, given everything, and if you don't, he's the first one to pick you up on it. And I think as a group of players, I've never seen a manager like him that's able to keep everyone happy, even the ones that don't play, keep everyone pushing on a daily basis, because it's not great when you're not playing. I've been there, as we said, under Rafa. It's difficult to keep pushing yourself, but he does it and he gets the best out of everybody, and I think that's why he's the very best.
You're talking about training. I've got to ask you, many Americans, they look at how you play and the sometimes horizontal nature of your diving blocks, John. They're almost NHL hockey style when you sacrifice your body in front of the shooter. When I was growing up watching English football, defenders never did that, closing down space, flinging themselves at the ball. Now everyone does it. Few do it better than you. Do you actually practice flinging yourself at the ball in training?
I mean, I do. I train as I play. And for me, that's what carries on to the training field as well. So I give everything, and, you know, you throw yourself into tackles sometimes, which, as I said before, sometimes you can get a knock and you kind of miss a game because of it. But that's the way I am. That's the way I've been born. And I'll continue to the end of my career to kind of be like that. But, you know, for me, I'm probably the luckiest player in the world to be playing for the club I love and to be captain. So to give everything on a daily basis and on a weekend when we play our games is just something, you know, I feel very proud and privileged to be able to do so. To give everything is natural for me. And as I said, I'd gladly throw myself in front of a foot, a leg, a ball, whatever it may be, to stop a goal or to stop a counter-attack, whatever it may be.
Well, what's it like playing against Diego Costa every day in training? Such an intense bloke. Have you been on the receiving end?
Well, we had a little run-in, actually, when we played Atletico in the semi-final of the Champions League a couple of years ago. But having played against him then, I didn't actually know how good he was. Now, I knew, obviously, he was a top player at the time when he was being linked with him. But coming up against him, you know, he caused me problems the whole game, kind of running in behind, dropping short, very quick, very aggressive as well. But when you see him day in, day out, he's just, you know, you realise, actually, how good he is. And for me, he's one of the very best I've played against, so delighted to have him on my side. As I said, he can be a pain in the backside as well for defenders, like he was me. But we're delighted to have him at the Bridge, and, you know, he had a great first season last year, and we're hoping that he continue doing that and scoring goals.
You and Chelsea and Diego Costa, you're playing three games in the United States this summer. You lost one against the mighty Red Bulls. You snuck past PSG on penalties. Barcelona now away. I've got to say, we Americans, we adore these games, seeing elite footballers up close, hence the crowd, 60,000, 70,000, 80,000. Can you tell us honestly, as a player in the preseason, What are your true, honest goals for these games? I mean, I'm assuming that the results actually don't really stay with you.
I don't think they stay with you, but at the same time, you know, after we lost to the Red Bulls for 2 days, you know, the whole atmosphere in the squad was kind of, you know, deflated, was down, you know, was really quiet, which is not a nice feeling to lose games. And once again, that comes back to the manager. You know, we're here to obviously get game time, get sharpness. And for us as well, listen, it'll be nice for us to come back, you know, during the season 1 year, like the NFL, you know, kind of comes to England or at the end of the season, because I think we always kind of come to the US or to Canada, and, you know, the fans have been excellent and patient with us as well, because we're not at our full fitness. And for me, there was different class in all the games. Even when we lost, they was right behind us. I mean, I don't know if you see the PSG game, but they was excellent. You know, the stadium was perfect, the pitch was excellent, and the fans were fully behind Chelsea. So for us, it's a real joy to be here. It's like being, you know, it's like home from home for us. But as I said, we'd love to come kind of during the season and show our full potential and what we can really do.
Yeah, I mean, you've been on tour in the US 3 or 4 times now in your career. Jose Mourinho talked about how much he loves coming to the US. He even floated the notion this week of playing real Chelsea games in the States while Stamford Bridge is being renovated. Can you talk about how you've experienced the fandom develop here over all the years since you first came in 2004?
Yeah, I think when we look back in 2004-05, it was kind of unheard of, really. The manager's first season, so it was a big season for him and us. And we kind of come away, and it was, you know, not only an opportunity, you know, for the new players to settle in and get to know everybody. We thoroughly enjoyed. We was in LA at the time as well. We thoroughly enjoyed it. The manager especially, and he said this is where he wants to come every pre-season. If he had the option, I'm sure he would, but from the player side of things, as I said, it's, you know, the people are so friendly. It's a delight to be here. The food's excellent. The training facilities are superb. You know, everything about it, it kind of ticks all boxes, really. And, you know, you can see why the likes of Lance and Stevie have now come over.
And Didier Drogba.
Because it ticks an awful lot of boxes. And Didier now, yeah.
Oh, can't be long, John. Can't be long before there's an MLS jersey with your name on it. One game I do want to ask you about, the Community Shield. Arsenal coming up the weekend after next. Is this a game that you do care about? I mean, it's technically a friendly, but it's also Arsenal. It's Arsene Wenger. As a player, how does it rate in terms of games that you care about winning, losing, or just playing yourself into form?
Listen, 100%, it's all about winning the trophy. It's as simple as that. It's against our big London rivals. Peter Cech's obviously gone there as well. It's going to add a little bit more spice to it. And for me, even speaking about the Red Bulls one, has kind of got me fired up a little bit. I hate losing. Everyone in the squad's the same as well. So ideally, we want to take fitness from the games and prepare ourselves right. But at the end of the day, when there's trophies on the line, we want to go and win it. You know, it could set the tone for the opening game of the season. A big rival. And as I say, we'll be going there to win it for sure. But, you know, coming here to get our fitness as well and go back into that game is what it's all about. So preparation for that game is kind of well underway and we're feeling good. So going back there full of confidence and as champions.
As I said at the top, you're a complicated bloke. If you type in John Terry chants into Google, you'll see thousands of hymns of passion and undevoted love written by Chelsea fans who adore your captaining, your leading, your legending. You'll also see the creative vitriol of opposing fans in equal measure. What do you do with all the hate on and off the field? Can you talk about the mental approach you use to block out the noise?
I try not to block it out, actually, because I feel, you know, when I go to stadiums, it probably is me they target. And, you know, I do get a lot of stick around, you know, not only in the UK, but everywhere we go, really. But I kind of thrive on that and try and use it in a positive way. But I certainly don't try and block it out. I use it to my advantage. Because 9 times out of 10, if I can stay focused and keep the team focused, we're going to come out as winners. And when you walk off that pitch having done your job and done it the right way and go off with 3 points, you know, there's not much more to say. So you hope that, you know, when you hang up your boots, obviously you don't want to be hated and you don't want to be... You just want to be thought of as a very good footballer and someone who gave everything for their club. I'm sure that if I was in their team, they would love me in their team because I'm one of them players who gives everything to the call. So, unfortunately, the stick comes with it, but I'm very much used to that now.
I mean, how do you expect your career to be remembered, John?
Well, there's an awful lot of trophies, first and foremost, so you can't hide away from that. So regardless of what people think or say, you know, you can't take away what I've won and done in the game. As a person and player, that's for anyone who's met me. Anybody who's not met me, you know, shouldn't be judging me and shouldn't be questioning my character or the person I am. But as I say, footballing-wise, they've had opportunity to see me play, whether that be on TV. And if you're a football person, you can make a judgment on whether I'm a good player or not. But as I say, it all comes down to trophies and what I've won. And at the end of my career, I'll look back and I'll be very, very proud and happy with what I've achieved if it finished tomorrow.
You talk about trophies. I want to finish with an amazing statistic. Chelsea have existed since 1905. You've been on the field for 16 of the 25 trophies the club have ever won. You turn 35 this December, John. Have you started to think about how you'll be replaced at Chelsea? Can you be replaced at Chelsea?
I mean, I certainly can be, for sure. You know, we've got Kurt Zouma in the background, if not, you know, on the forefront, waiting for his opportunity, waiting for me to slip up. But I think being at such a big club like Chelsea anyway, all my career, you know, when I was 17, 18... I looked in the team and had the likes of Deffoe and Leboeuf, and they just won the World Cup, and I wondered how I was going to break into the team. That didn't stop me giving up, and, you know, I kept going. So that's the way to look at it. And I'm just thoroughly enjoying it at the moment and last season, obviously. But I know for sure that there's players in the academy and reserve team and the likes of Kurt and Gary that want my place, you know, full-time. I'm not silly enough to think that they don't. It's just down to me to give everything, and hopefully the manager can make his decision and keep me in the team.
You've just seen Steven Gerrard's last season. Before the year before, you saw Frank Lampard's last at Chelsea Football Club. How do you imagine the end of John Terry's career at Chelsea will go down?
Well, as I say, I hope I've seen it an end at Chelsea. You never know kind of what's around the corner and what happens next. For me, my dream would be to be a one-club man and finish at the Bridge. If Chelsea decide sooner that, you know, that time's up and they don't want to re-sign me for another year, and John Terry feels he's got another year or 2 years left in him, then I'll kind of look to play elsewhere. But I've spoken before, I could never play for another Premier League club or in the Premier League or in England. So that will be, you know, away from the UK. I'm not too sure that will be, but I'm hoping to never kind of cross that bridge.
Can we get a prediction from John Terry for the season ahead, John?
Yeah, of course. I think it's going to be a really good season, actually. I think with us being champions, you know, I've been there before, everyone comes back stronger and hungrier and really wants to beat you and will raise their game 15, 20%. I think with the other teams buying the way they've brought and bringing in some big signings, I think it's going to be a lot tougher for us. So mentally, I think we need to be ready. But I think for me, you're looking at the normal teams. You're looking at the Arsenals, Man City's, Man United's, to be right up there. And for me, and obviously Chelsea will be right up there and fighting, of course. You know, I don't want to put my neck on the line and say we're going to win it. I'm not that type of player to come out and make predictions like that, but for sure, we'll be there or thereabouts.
I think just by accident, you missed out the Evertons as well, so I'll just add them to that list, John. I want to thank you for joining us. We look forward, ain't everyone does, to a fantastic, gripping title defence in the season to come. John Terry, Godspeed.
Thank you.
Amazing, Rog. Dare I say it, you seemed like you sort of liked him.
To say, I was shocked how much the Red Bulls' victory over Chelsea Football Club stung.
Yeah. Interesting, Rog. Interesting. Ravens. Our first Raven, Rog, is from Gudmundur Heike Gudmundsson.
From who?
It's from Gudmundur, a.k.a. Gudmundsson.
We normally say at this point, we normally go, wow, we love America.
No, it's such an American, Icelandic name,
Rog. I think he's named for Gudmundur Arason, 1161 to 1237, the Icelandic saintly bishop who took part in increasing the powers of the Catholic Church in medieval Iceland.
Yeah, Gudmundur is like being called John in Iceland, by the way. Hi, guys. I wanted to get your opinion on my current situation with my beloved Chelsea Football Club. I'm a loyal supporter of the Blues, hence my decent selection of Chelsea jerseys. However, in recent years, I've been unlucky with the selection of players I've put on the back of those shirts. Unlucky is an understatement. Just to name a few players, Lukaku, Juan Mata, Torres, Drogba, and now recently Lampard, have all gone after I bought my jersey with their name on it. In Frank's scenario, as soon as I pressed the add to basket button, he signed for NYCFC and the rest is history. I'm almost certain that the Chelsea board of directors are waiting for me, Gudmundur, to make the first move in order to see who they ought to get rid of. And now I'm hesitant. I really want to get the new Chelsea FC shirt, but I'm most definitely jinxed. Should I pick my least favourite player or pretend it never happened? Bold regards. Don't get Cuadrado. That's my one piece of advice. Don't get Cuadrado. I have the same problem.
Get Gudmundur on the back of your jersey.
My son George, Rog, has had a Juan Mata and he's had an Andre Shirley and he's had a Lampard and I'm very worried about what to get him for his next shirt. I was getting him a Loftus Cheek and then I saw what Jose said about him a few weeks ago and I started to get very worried.
I'll say this. You've got magical powers, Gudmundur.
Yeah.
Embrace them. Pick the player you loathe. Make the squad stronger by his absence. It's worth it for $79.
Yeah. Then buy Cuadrado.
If I had your power, I'd buy a Dave Azpilicueta jersey.
Yeah.
Exhibit A for me that even on teams you hate, there's players you can't help but admire.
Yeah.
I'd love him to come to Everton and be a force of good. On a force of good.
Yeah. Absolutely, Rog. All things good, Everton. All things bad and evil, Chelsea. A recurrent theme. Okay, Rog, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week from the Guinness International Champions Cup, Rog.
Well, we're both drinking Guinness.
Oh, it's amazing. There's the confluence of events. Is an anonymous GFOP who wrote in this Raven. Dear Dave Owen Rog, as a long-time GFOP, I've been tempted to send a Raven several times before, mostly in regards to being interested in joining the Men in Blazers national team, and because, like Davo, I also get spice hiccups. Hail, fellow sufferer. Until now, however, I felt that I didn't have anything quite suboptimal enough to add to the conversation. Working in the television and film industry, I've often used the EPL as a way to bond with various crew members, whether as a shared interest to break the ice or to engage in the time-honoured tradition of banter during a long day on set. I even wear one of my Chelsea shirts on every match day that falls during the work week as both my own way of supporting the Blues from afar when I can't watch and as a conversation starter of sorts, which brings me to my conundrum. I've recently started working on a project where one of my bosses is a very big supporter of a club that carries a long-standing rivalry with my own. I'm not asking for an intercession by the Men in Blazers on my behalf, merely a few words of advice. Do I forego my multi-year tradition for the sake of my career? Do I attempt to hide the long-sleeve shirt under another article of clothing, particularly impractical during the next few months? Or do I simply do what my true blue nature tells me and wear the shirt, consequences be damned? Any guidance on the matter would be much appreciated, especially with the new season just around the corner. Obrigado. Name withheld for obvious reasons. P.S. No company time or resources were utilised in the creation or sending of this anonymous Raven. What do you think, Rog?
I think one of the biggest differences I love between football culture in the US and the UK is that rivalries were forged in blood in the UK. True venom.
Yeah.
But when we meet so many GFOPs in America and in Spain this summer, I'm always fascinated to hear who they support, how they made that choice.
Yeah.
Their answer is normally predicated by, I'm sorry, but, which inevitably leads to Chelsea or United or Liverpool. And I always say, don't be sorry. I just love that they love the game that I love. And after spending 20 years here and remembering when no one gave a crap about football, all I say, I believe in America, rivalries are more often to be savoured rather than to come to blows. And a mutual love of football and a probable shared love of the US men's national team and US women's national team bonds all. So do what you normally do, Anonymous.
Do what you normally do. Wear the shirt. And now time, Rog, for our hashtag to the football contest that we've done with our partners at Guinness. We want to thank all GFOPs who took the time to enter our hashtag to the football contest. We ask you to submit your best, most creative photo or video celebrating Guinness football and the connection between the two. Undeniable connection between the two, Rog. We received some remarkable entries. We should actually say hundreds of remarkable entries. But the winner, Brian Lamb of Kalamazoo, Michigan, went above and beyond. You can see his entry on meninblazers.com and also on our social channels. Please check that out. Also, a congratulations to Steve Tansek, Rog, who won second place, and to honourable mentions Michael Andrews and Sarah Nesbitt. Some fantastic entries. Steve actually came and met us before the game up here. Lovely to meet
Thank
him at long last. Long
all
time
of your
GFOP.
Entries.
Yeah, very much true. Okay, your weekend looks like this, Rog. Can't believe we're saying this again. Sunday.
Say again.
At 10 a.m. Chelsea. Your weekend looks like this.
Welcome back, life.
Rog, Sunday at 10 a.m. Chelsea versus Arsenal in the Community Shield. The game will be on the Fox family of networks. And later Sunday in NMLS, San Jose and Earthquakes versus Portland Timbers at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN2. And at 7 p.m., Rog, and Chicago Fire versus NFC Dallas on Fox Sports 1. There are many other ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. Rog, what are you putting in the Emporium this week?
A book! Literature or Life by Jorge Semprún.
Oh, you love books.
Oh, but this one, Dave, one of the joys of being in Spain
was
realising how little I knew about Spanish history in general, Spanish Civil War in particular. I read a lot about it while I was there. It was mind-blowing.
Yeah,
I had no sense of Franco's regime and what he did to his people.
Yeah,
honestly, not talked about that much in Spain either.
No, I know, amazing.
Estimated 200,000 to 400,000 Spaniards died during Franco's regime, including, this blows my mind, 16,000 anti-fascists were given by Franco to Hitler to kill in concentration camps during the Holocaust. Semprún was an amazing man, a poet and philosopher who fought Franco for the French resistance, ended up in Buchenwald. He survived and became a screenwriter and a politician. This book is his meditation on those experiences. It's a must read for anyone who thinks about the Second World War every day of their lives.
Wow, Rog, sounds amazing. So we drove down here in our brand new Mini, Rog, your brand new Mini.
I got a Mini.
Amazing. I had to drive it because you weren't as familiar with all of the working parts of the vehicle. At some point, you asked if you were driving when you were sitting in the passenger seat without a steering wheel.
I could have driven it, but most of the journeys I take are directly into a tree.
I did think of getting you one of those fake little toy steering wheels that you give to a kid to put in the back of the car so that they think they're driving.
I'm like, I wouldn't have known.
There was a long explanation of the paddle shifting.
I was like Eddie Murphy in Trading Places. Yeah. We are moving.
It was a beautiful drive, though, Rogers. We motored down from New York City. We crossed several large rivers, the Chesapeake Bay.
It was good. That was a startling moment in my life.
It was amazing. We saw Philadelphia. Very excited to see downtown Philadelphia.
We sweated out a crap load of cheesesteak.
Yeah, it was really, really good. But you know what your car was missing? Your car's not missing a lot. But the one thing your car is missing, Rog, is a Winston Churchill bobblehead. Probably the only Englishman bobblehead you would probably take. So you'd probably love Winston Churchill. So I'm buying you on Amazon the Winston Churchill bobblehead. It's a steal at $19.95. Only five left in stock, so get them quickly. It's over 8 inches tall, Rog. It's a finest quality Winston Churchill bobblehead. The finest quality one ever produced. Somebody's done some intense checking of all the Winston Churchill bobbleheads, and it's highly collectible. So I'm looking forward to you enjoying that in your new Mini, Roger.
Oh, David, thank you. I'm very touched. Off we go. One night in DC.
Yeah.
I'm off to Bournemouth tomorrow.
Yeah. Bournemouth.
For 3 days.
Yeah.
In the fascinating new fairy tale team, the new Burnley, the Southern Burnley, who will enchant us this season. Their stadium, 11,700, smaller than a number, I think, of Texas high school football stadiums.
Can't
David, I cannot wait to meet Eddie Howe. And this team over the next couple of days.
Yeah, if you want more Men in Blazers, we recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now, that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014 on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. We're going to do a Men in Blazers road trip mixtape from the music we listened down today, including Rock the Casbah, such a great song. Rog. Please check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers, meninblazers.wikispaces.com. That's a wonder of the modern world, Rog. And meninblazers.com is our website. That's where you can sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our wonderful partners at Guinness. Our Twitter is at meninblazers, our Instagram at meninblazers, at embassy_Davies. We've got a Facebook, we've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, narrated by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin,
Akshay,
and
Calvin,
Alex.
And Alex.
You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
See, sucker it up.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu fight in America. Thank you, Chelsea. Thank you, Barcelona.
Thank you, Guinness.
It's great to be back.
Thank you, Minnie. Thank you, Rog. Love you.
Love you too, David.